Hi, and welcome to the Finally Pregnant podcast, the podcast for people who are finally pregnant after infertility and loss. I'm your host, Kat Strawbridge, and after almost 7 years trying with multiple rounds of fertility treatment, which sadly included pregnancy loss, last year I was finally pregnant, and now I'm finally parenting my gorgeous daughter, Ren. I'm delighted to say that this podcast is sponsored by Peanut. Peanut is the app that helps you meet like-minded women who are trying to conceive, pregnant, or already mums. Peanut provides a safe space for women to build friendships, ask questions, and find support. Introducing you to women nearby who are at a similar stage in their journey, Peanut provides access to a community of women who are there to listen, share information, and offer valuable advice. Whether it's understanding IVF, PCOS, miscarriage, or pregnancy and beyond, Peanut is a place to connect with women who understand. I used to go to a weekly rhyme time class with Ren, and between the babies crying, the toddlers singing, and all the general noise and shenanigans, it could be really hard to stop and chat to some of the other mums. So when one of them connected with me on Peanut, it was fab. We made a beeline for each other at the next class and even went for a coffee together afterwards. Because of the app, it meant there was a friendly face in the room, which I have to say was just really lovely. You can download the app for free today. Head to peanut.app.link/finallypregnant or search for Peanut in your app store. And when you do, make sure you head over to the Finally Pregnant group. Hello, how are you doing? I'm doing okay, although I have just been for a COVID test. I was really nervous about telling you that. Is that really silly? I don't know. I just felt a bit weird. I've got a tickly cough, which I've had since yesterday, and I thought it would be prudent to get tested. I'll have the results by the time this goes out, and all being well, it will be negative, but it's better to be safe than sorry, isn't it? It wasn't the most comfortable thing I've ever done, but well worth it all the same. I am genuinely overwhelmed by the response to last week's episode about paternal postnatal depression. The number of listens just in the first 24 hours was incredible and goes to show how important a topic this is and how much we need to continue to raise awareness of it. So if you have listened to it, please do share it. If you haven't, do go and have a listen, because I just think it's so important that we all know more about this. A while ago, I hosted a webinar for a group in Dubai, and it was called Coping with an Anxious Pregnancy, and it was full of tips and strategies on how to make the most of your pregnancy. I know I'm never going to be able to make it not anxious 100% of the time, but I really want you to be able to enjoy as much of it as possible and kind of steal back some of those anxious moments so that you can, enjoy it, like I say, and make the most of it. I'm really pleased to let you know that I've created a webinar. Well, actually, I'm kind of calling it a workshop for everyone this time. So yeah, really excited about that. It's being held on Saturday, the 19th of December at 9:30. So I appreciate if you listen to this maybe in the States, that isn't going to be the best time. But if this goes well, then I definitely will do one perhaps in the evening as well. The reason we've done it in the morning in this instance is because it is going to be a bit of a double session, because Sim, my lovely yoga teacher who takes the yoga sessions, is going to be hosting a yoga sessions taster class directly after the workshop. Now, somewhat obviously, you can attend the workshop at any point of your pregnancy, but we recommend that you are over 12 weeks to take any of our yoga classes. So to make it accessible, we've split it into two separate events. But if you buy both, you get a little discount. So head over to katstrawbridge.com/events to find out more about that if you're interested in either or both. Time for a little Ren update. If you follow me over on Insta, you'll know she was back at nursery on Thursday, and I was pretty happy about that, which makes me feel all sorts of guilty, even though I know I shouldn't be. But anyway, I know it's okay to be happy with having my own space. It was only for a few hours, but it really helped, and it meant I could catch up on work and just, like I say, had that bit of headspace. And I couldn't wait to pick her up at the end of it. You know, I do adore her so much. Honestly, she is just everything. But that doesn't mean that it's not normal for me to kind of want to have a little space of my own as well. I know that. And for anyone else that needs to hear that, if you are with a little one at home in isolation because of COVID or for any other reason, yeah, I hear you. I feel, you know, how difficult that can be, even though it's a mix of emotions. But anyway, her standing up on her own is happening for longer periods, but still no walking without one of us holding her. But I've got this whole hashtag walking by Christmas. Fingers crossed, fingers crossed. On to today's episode, I am chatting to the fabulous Keely, who is trying to be a mum on Instagram. All the links to everything I mentioned are in the show notes. Keely spent many years trying to conceive before deciding to look into donor eggs, and her and her husband John chose to go ahead with this in a clinic in Russia last year. I'm really pleased to let you know that her gorgeous son Freddie was born earlier this year, and he is just one of many little miracles born into the Hangout since it launched. And oh, I can't tell you how amazing it is each time we hear a little one has arrived. There has been a flurry recently to anyone in the Hangout who has had a little one. It's just the most wonderful news. It's so incredible as well to help support people through their pregnancy and then onto their parenting. And we had a parenting class, or not class, we had a parenting group last week. And it's just, oh, it is lovely getting to meet the little ones if they're there. They're generally asleep, having a little cuddle, but it's lovely to see everyone through into the parenting stage as well. If you want to find more about the Hangout, whether you're pregnant or parenting, head over to catstrawbridge.com/the Hangout. And as I said, all the links in the show notes. Lastly, as always, please do subscribe wherever you listen and rate and review too. To give you an idea of the reviews, I thought I'd read one out to you. It's from a medical professional, actually, which I think is amazing because, as you know, following my recent survey, I want to make sure that the right support is coming to you from fertility clinics and healthcare professionals all over, really. So thank you so much to Nick$1.08 for listening. They said, valuable, genuine, and truthful. Amazing resource for men and women to have following possibly years of struggle. As a professional, it's valuable to gain insight into what people I care for may have been through and be able to point them in this podcast direction. So that's really special. Thank you so much. And that's it for now, other than to say, yeah, I hope you enjoy our conversation and I look forward to being back next week. Take care. Bye-bye. Hi there, Keely. How are you doing?
I'm good, Kat. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Thank you. Thanks for joining us today on the Finally Pregnant podcast. Really appreciate the chat. And I have to say, I'm just really, really delighted that we're having this chat. How amazing is that?
Who would have thought?
Who would have thought? So we met, I was thinking about this. We met, it was January 2018 at the IVF Babble lunch, didn't we?
It was, yeah. That's weird. I was thinking about that last night, knowing I was going to be talking to you today, and I was trying to figure out when it was, and it was, yeah, January 2018, yeah.
Like, that sparked an awful lot of friendships and, you know, kind of conversations. It was an amazing lunch to have been at, and we have obviously met up lots and lots of times since then and been recorded for Alice's podcast a couple of times, haven't we? Once before either of us was pregnant, then when I was pregnant, and now, like I say, you're here on Finally Pregnant. Firstly, massive congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Tell us how you're feeling today.
Today I feel pretty good because I actually got a pretty decent night's sleep. Well, I say decent. I got up to go to the toilet twice and I woke up at kind of 3:30, 4:30. But that's quite good these days. I'm just getting that like soreness on my hips and then just constantly flipping and trying to get into a comfy. I've got like more pregnancy pillows than you could possibly throw a stick at, but don't seem to really do the job, and then I end up like trying to sleep upright. But I feel quite refreshed today, so bonus.
Brilliant, love that. And tell us a bit about who you are and what you do generally as well.
Yeah, so I'm trying to be a mum on Instagram, but in a former life I'm a TV producer. So I used to work in advertising for a very long time, for 20 odd years, making commercials. So I used to work for a private company and independent company, and then I worked for Channel 4 for a long time. And then I moved to the dark world of advertising and worked in an agency, a big agency in London for a long time. And I loved it. I absolutely loved my job. And I kind of can say that now, like looking back, and I was like, and I was quite good at it. Like I never, you know, at the time, you never give yourself much credit, do you? But I was, you know, I was pretty good at it. And I was very lucky and I got to do some amazing things and amazing opportunities and went to amazing places and still had to deal with clients. But, you know, that's everyone's grudge to bear. So I loved it but it was full on. And by the time that I left, you know, it's the kind of standard cliche of advertising, particularly being a woman, I think, really long hours, just on it all the time, just constantly living on adrenaline. And you don't really realize that until you stop. And I decided, well, we decided, it's like 2.5 years ago now. No, it's 3.5 years ago now that I would leave. And it had kind of come to a natural point in my career where I was kind of the head of production at this agency and I was covering a maternity leave and we were going through more IVF and I wasn't sure I wanted to stay anymore. I loved all the people, but the job was just too much. So we had a discussion that actually when my colleague came back from maternity leave that I would just leave, basically. And it was more to start off with like a 3-month sort of, you know, sabbatical kind of. And actually Dwighty, I call my husband Dwighty, it's weird, I know. He just said, well, maybe just don't. Like maybe just don't go back at all. And let's see what happens. So that's what I did. And I have to say it's been the most amazing. I've been so lucky and it's been the most amazing thing that I think I could have done. So yeah, and then since then I've been basically dicking around on Instagram pretty much and talking to people and meeting lovely people. And, you know, through all of that as well, some amazing opportunities have come up and found myself doing all sorts of weird and wonderful things that I never thought I'd be doing or be able to talk about, or whether that was from, you know, all my sort of green beauty stuff that I love, to raising awareness about infertility, to being able to get to be involved in some really lovely and quite important conversations about all of that. So yeah, now I'm sort of a, you know, master of all trades. Yeah, what is it? What's the expression?
Jack of all trades.
Jack of all trades, master of none.
Oh, you're a master of a few. Don't worry. So you essentially, what you're saying is you left work because of infertility.
Yeah.
And would you say, you know, through all the Instagram thing and everything, just kind of jumping forwards to the now, that your pregnancy is a donor egg pregnancy, and that's not something that you're kind of shy about saying, which is brilliant, and why should you be? But I know that people might be listening because they are thinking about it and feeling a bit, just investigating, I guess. Mm-hmm. Do you think that Instagram really helped you in that journey?
Definitely. I mean, luckily I had a very old friend of mine which is why I went to the clinic I went to in the end, who had already kind of started going through that process. So I was talking to her a lot, but absolutely on Instagram. And it's funny how, you know, as I know, and I know you talk about this, is how your relationship with Instagram and then the people on it sort of evolves and changes because of where you are and what you're doing in your life. So I kind of started on that, kind of banging on the IVF bandwagon and being like, right, I'm going through this and I'm going through this. And unfortunately, I had to go through a lot of rounds of IVF. But then through that, and then through starting to do my own research and investigation and kind of trying to find people, I found some amazing people and really inspiring people whose stories gave me the confidence, I think, probably. And in a way, like, we did go to one therapy session, counselling session, before we committed to the process, but that's all we did. And we kind of did it as like a checklist thing, because we knew that some clinics required it as part of the process, but also just out of intrigue. But to be honest, I found like Instagram was more my counselling and therapy than anything, really, because it's like any of these things, it's anecdotal. You know, anything anecdotal is so much more powerful than something written in black and white on a piece of paper. So yeah, I found it really, really, really helpful, really helpful. And now I'm kind of, you know, and now I'm finding more people that are talking about that and kind of a different, not different community, but, you know, another offshoot of that community. And from that comes other things as well, you know. I never used to be a massive social media fan, like really back in the day, like when Facebook started, I was like, I'm not going on Facebook. Why do I need to go on Facebook? But yeah, I'm totally addicted, probably sold. Is the word.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think, you know, there is a huge community now, like, and it's almost like an umbrella community of infertility. And exactly like you say, there's lots of offshoots and pockets, and you find yourself kind of journeying through them, whatever that is, and whatever kind of order you do it in. But we're all kind of in it together as well, all at the same time.
I think that's what it is. I think it's kind of, even regardless of whether your exact situation might be different to somebody else's, you're kind of tied by this bond that falls under infertility. And I think that's what makes it really unique, actually, because there are so many different stories and so many variations on that stories. And, you know, coin that phrase of there's so many different ways to build a family. There really are. And what that then affords you is like insight and experience and kind of, I think also the amount of emotional intelligence and empathy that you gain from that is kind of like, you wouldn't get that anywhere else. You know, you couldn't really read that in a book or kind of talk to a therapist about it. I just don't think you could. I think it's kind of really inherent. And I think that's what's amazing about it, actually, because you can end up being really, really good friends with someone who's not in your position at all. But because of the common threads or the feelings or, oh yeah, I felt like that in this situation, it's quite special, actually. Yeah.
There is a bond. Even going back to that IVF babble lunch, just walking in there, there was just like a common bond that I think everyone there felt, to be honest. But right, if you're not on Instagram, basically you need to get on there. I think we've done like a massive advert. Mark Zuckerberg, you know, by all means.
Yeah, exactly.
Feel free to thank us. But let's talk about like where you are. So you are finally pregnant after numerous years. So yes. Tell us, how many weeks pregnant are you?
So I am nearly 32. So I'm 31 plus 4 today, I think. Yeah, never thought I'd be in my 30s again, Kat.
very good.
so it's just surreal. It's still surreal, even though like I'm actually really loving being pregnant, which I didn't know whether I would actually, regardless of all the shit. Like I think it's really hard to conceptualize something that you literally have no idea what it's going to be like. But yeah, so I'm 31 plus 4. Everything's fine. Baby Dave, which is his nickname. We're not calling him Dave, by the way. Nothing against Daves. My brother's called Dave, hence why he's called Baby Dave, which is also slightly weird and a bit probably screwed up, but never mind. Yeah, he's all on track and he's great. And we saw the midwife this week. So yeah, that's all been really reassuring. And I feel like I've sort of been, touch wood, like quite lucky in my pregnancy. Like I didn't get really bad morning sickness. Like I felt nauseous but nothing debilitating. And until the last couple of weeks, pretty much, and the kind of soreness, and I've just been getting on with it, and I really feel really lucky. I mean, I do often say, I said this to my mum not so long ago, I was just like, I mean, I really would have been being unlucky if I'd had a really horrendous pregnancy. Like that would not have been fair. I'm now trying to think, I've kind of done the, got used to the idea of being pregnant and that's great. And now I'm just trying to get used to the idea of actually having a baby, which I still have to stop myself and just, I keep going to Dwighty, we're going to have another person in our house, like another being, like another little person. He's like, yeah. He's like, yeah.
And they make themselves very comfortable.
Exactly. So that's quite, you know, I think it's also because, you know, I'm in my 40s and I've lived my life a lot of time just it being me or me and Dwighty or me and, you know, you're very used to that. I know you've said this before, like your own space and the way you live your life and kind of navigate your life. And it's not because you don't want that other thing, but I think it would be different if you were quite a lot younger and being pregnant, I think, because you just haven't had all that raft of experience to kind of, the dynamic is going to be totally different.
I completely agree. And I think like for better and worse, you know, like one of my sisters had her first accidentally. Lucky thing. You know, one of those people, bless her. But she was 21 at the time, you know? And so with that comes youth, energy, probably no real preconceptions, just a lot of, you know, there's a lot of positives and some not so positive things happen if you have little ones when you're younger. And likewise, if you're older, you know, you do have a lot more experience. You kind of know yourself a bit better, but you are a bit more tired and you are quite used to things going your way, I guess. Well, except for the whole infertility thing, obviously. But, you know, so it swings around about. Some are good, some are bad. And it just, it depends how you let that affect you, really. And as far as the tired thing is concerned, like, and a lot of it, you've got nothing to compare it to. So it's just your version of it. So that's what you know. So yeah, it's not too bad. Not too bad doing it when you're older, I promise. But how are you feeling? Because, you know, you are just so positive. Like, it's incredible how positive you are. I'm sure that, like everyone, you know, you have your moments, and you were talking the other day about having a bit of a, you know, a momentary meltdown, and that's totally normal. But you are incredibly positive. You've accepted being pregnant and you're enjoying it. And, you know, like, what's your secret? Do you have one?
I don't know that I do. Like, I don't. Naturally, I'm not a very anxious person. I'm not a worrier. I don't know where that comes from. I honestly don't know where that comes from, because my mum is a worrier in a really nice way, if you're listening, mum. I think if I'm honest, it comes a bit from doing what I used to do. When you're a producer, you're really solution focused. So you're always problem solving. Basically, so someone says, oh, I've got this like huge idea and da da da, but there's no money and there's no that, you know, and you have to find ways of making it happen, basically. And you always say, you never say no, and you always say, well, let's look into it. I don't know whether it's possible yet, but so you're always trying to make a positive spin on stuff because you want to realize people's visions or wishes or whatever. And I actually do bizarrely think that sort of skill, as it were, has actually made a massive difference. I think I just try, and it makes you very, not unemotionally attached, but like quite practical about stuff. So it's like when we were going through IVF, like it's that managing expectations thing. It's, I really want this to work. There's a likelihood it might, but there's also a huge likelihood it won't work, and therefore what's the plan after that? And again, maybe that is part of stemming from my job. You know, you're constantly making contingency plans, or, you know, it's going to rain, we can't shoot outside, right, what are we going to do, let's find a studio. So I think there is a bit of that. And I think also I kind of say this as well, and it's not that you shouldn't let yourself feel all those feelings and go to, I don't mean dark places, but, you know, acknowledge all those feelings. But I kind of refuse to be sad all the time. And I'm not saying that if you are feeling sad a lot of the time, that there's something wrong or that that's not a natural way of feeling. It's just, for me personally, I just don't want to be in that state, because actually I have lots to be happy about. And this is one part of my life that didn't quite go according to plan, whatever plan that might have been. But, you know, and I know it's like a cliche of like, but it doesn't define me. If we had never ended up having being able to have kids, actually, my life would have been pretty amazing anyway. And I know that might be rich, me sitting here whilst pregnant saying that, because I can now say it. But I think I always said that before as well. And, you know, and Dwight and I know you've said this before about you and Bob, but Dwight and I were like, there was us before there was all of this crap, you know, and there's a reason that we're together, and there's a reason that we want to be together. So there's that kind of thing as well. But yeah, it is a bit of, maybe just a bit of, I don't know, stubbornness. I just don't want to be sad. And don't get me wrong, and I kind of say this to people because I get asked this a lot. It's like, well, what are your tips and how do you stay really positive? And a lot of it is just because that's just naturally who I am. Like, sometimes you can't force it. If you're inherently a bit of a worrier and a bit of a, you can't force to be yourself someone that you're not. And that's not because it's a negative thing. It's just, yeah, I just don't want to be, I don't want to be sad, but it doesn't mean I'm not sad. But yeah. And then still, you know, with the whole donor thing, I'm still up and down sometimes about, you know, that can be quite challenging, because on the whole I'm like, this is totally incredible. Like, and I truly, truly, truly believe I would not be sitting here 31 weeks pregnant without having a donor. But that doesn't mean, like the other day I went, do you think he's gonna like us? But then I'm sure every parent sits there and decides. And I think that's the other way I try and look at it as well, particularly now finally being pregnant, is, and I did talk about this in terms of, you know, even if it's, regardless of whether it's donor or, I think IVF babies in general, all of those anxieties and worries and whatever are no different to a normal parent, as I call them. I just don't think they are, because, you know, I could have my own biological kid and they still might not like me, or they'll hate me when they're 14. Or I think that's the way that I rationalize stuff for quite a lot of the time. It's like, this isn't happening because of my situation, this situation. This is just a universal feeling that a lot of people have that is totally acceptable, and lots of people think it. And it's kind of that you're not alone mentality, I think. But I do allow myself to be sad, of course. Like, you have to. That, I mean, I wouldn't be human if I didn't be some sort of weird robot. But yeah, I don't know if I've even answered the question.
Yeah, totally. And the thing is, like, I guess the reason that I ask that is because if there are people out there who aren't worried, they're pregnant and they're not worried, like, that's okay too. Exactly like you said, if you are a worrier, you're probably going to worry. I think that, unfortunately, because of all that goes before with infertility, it can turn you into, or kind of add certain feelings and emotions that you wouldn't necessarily have felt had you got pregnant without all of that bit. So it can make you more anxious. It can make you more emotional. It can make you more worried. And that can have an impact on who you are fundamentally longer term, and, you know, kind of the situations that you're in, i.e. pregnancy, parenting, etc. My take would be that it can possibly impact us more than a normal person, but a normal person, like we say, but, you know, we've got nothing to compare it to. I don't know if I would have been more nervous or not if I had got pregnant normally. Who knows? Like we said about the age thing. But yeah, going back to your positivity, like, it's incredible and it's infectious and it's amazing, and it's okay not to feel anxious, you know. And I don't even feel like I need to tell you this, but if anyone out there was worrying about it, if you're not feeling anxious all the time, that's okay. Don't feel anxious because you're not worrying. Please don't do that. And I know with my parenting, you know, a lot of people do feel more anxious, or say they do, when they're parenting post-infertility. And I don't necessarily feel like that a lot of the time. I certainly have waves of things, but actually I think I've been fairly chilled out by comparison to what I thought I would be. And I'm delighted that that's the case. You can't call it, can you? You just have to kind of roll with the punches and see how you react to stuff. I was nervous during my pregnancy, but the parenting side, I haven't felt as nervous. I guess I've kind of just spent my whole life building up to this. So I'm just going to do it my way and see what happens.
And who knows, I might be the reverse.
Oh, like, bless.
I'm totally chilled now and have all these idyllic visions about what this, like, amazing, cool parent, you know, like, chilled out parent I'm going to be. And I might be a nervous wreck. Like, I have no idea. I just literally have no idea. I think also I would say that part of, I think, that mindset comes from, I think it is very unique to each person and each person's journey to get there. Because although I was really unlucky through 8 rounds of IVF and none of them worked, I never had a positive test through IVF. I'd never been pregnant through IVF. I had a miscarriage, which was sad, but it was what it was. And I, you know, and actually looking back now and all the tests and everything that we'd done kind of made sense. But I never had to go through, you know, multiple miscarriages. I never had really bad side effects from the drugs. I never really, you know, even though I went through a lot, the situations that I went through wouldn't necessarily give me cause for concern now finally being pregnant, if you see what I mean. So even in early pregnancy, I said to Dwighty, once I see that heartbeat, I'm fine. I'm done. Like, I'm not going to sit and worry until 12 weeks, and then I'm not going to worry till 16 weeks, and then I'm not going to worry till 20 weeks. And I think it was my mentality of, like, there's no reason, once I've seen that heartbeat, really, it would be very heartbreaking, and I know it happens, but there's more likelihood it is going to go right than it's going to go wrong. And that's just the way that I look at it. So once I saw that heartbeat, really, I was kind of like, all right, cool, we're done. Like, let's get on with it. And I think also not burying your head in the sand, but like, I had someone contact me last week about saying, oh, have you got a good Kix app monitor that you're using? I was like, nope. It's like, I don't. It's like my consultant basically said, some days he'll be a bit quiet and some days he'll be doing it all day. And just, you'll know if something's not right. And I just said to this really sweet girl, I just said, I'm just using my gut. I mean, if I feel like there's something wrong, there's something wrong. And maybe that's part of my mentality as well. But then I know equally that sort of thing can be really, really reassuring for people and a tool to able to them to cope with their anxiety, which is perfectly, you know, valid and great. And it's amazing that those things exist out there. But yeah, all those sorts of things I haven't really, you know, and sometimes I've just forgotten. that I'm pregnant. Because again, I think you just, you know, you go through all of this and it's one of those things where you wanted it for so long, you've been doing it for so long, that it's a really unusual state to be in, to actually be pregnant. And then, so I just sort of forgot sometimes, you know, I mean, until the bump really started to come into play, I did just forget. And I'd just be carrying on buzzing about and doing, you know, whatever, and meeting people and all that. And then I'd suddenly get to the end of the day, I think, I'm a bit tired. You know, I'd be like, oh yeah, it's because you're carrying another human being inside your kills.
Why?
But yeah, I mean, I think that's part of my, I guess, my coping strategy as well. You know,
yeah. It's funny, actually. I had that thought about you just like when I was thinking about our chat today earlier this week. And I guess, you know, in your situation, as you've just described, you didn't have you had had the miscarriage, but then from a natural pregnancy, but you'd had lots and lots of tests. And I did a round at the clinic that you spent, you know, kind of a lot of your IVF journey at. And I know how kind of invasive the tests can be, like, or how thorough, should I say. But yeah, once you were pregnant, you know, and with your donor, and I guess, and you know, I hope this is an okay thing for me to ask you, but because you're putting your faith in the donor egg and you know that they have been, I guess, vetted, etc., rather than your own egg at that point, and you had no reason to distrust your body per se in a pregnancy, so you just kind of felt quite comfortable. Does that make sense? Yeah,
totally makes sense. And in some ways I had to reel back the confidence it was giving me, because actually it still doesn't always work. You know, I remember being in the clinic in St. Petersburg, and we'd had our transfer and we sort of just sat back down on the bed, and the girl came in with like the discharge form and signing the consent for the thing. And we went, that it then? After all that, like, it's just that. And we just walked out and went, oh, okay. But then it was very hard to... And I mean, people could not ask me, I never really talked about symptoms or anything on social media in terms of, because I don't think that's healthy for people either, because some people have them, some people don't. But I knew it had worked in the back of my head, because I had not had any of those feelings before, or those symptoms before. But even then, I was still, well, I'm not going to get ahead of myself, because the likelihood is it should 70% chance work. And that is to go from where we were, which was about 2% to 70% is just crazy. It's like mind blowing. And so therefore you think it's a given, and that's hard not to then jump forward and say, right, okay, so what are we going to put in the nursery and what are we going to do? You know, even though they are all the things that you want to think about and talk about and do, but you're absolutely right. It gave me much more confidence in terms of, you know, it was a healthy, much younger egg. Our donor was 30, 31. They screened her totally, you know, there was none of that, you know, and one of the talks that we had while we were at our clinic in Swedesburg, which is, it's bizarre that I've never ever seen this slide before. You know, like, you know, when you kind of think, how many times have I sat in an office and been explained to about this, this and this? But you know, it was about the embryology and kind of really how that works. And maybe also because we've never had that many eggs, or we've never had many blastocysts, or whatever it is, well, the reason why we didn't know this. But and what they were basically saying, which again gave us that confidence, was when people get very, you know, hung up about, well, what am I doing? Like, what is it in me that's stopping this happening? Or what is it? And actually, what they said is, it is 80% the quality of the embryo and 20% you. So your environment, your uterus, your whatever, is only 20% of the scenario. The embryo is the thing. And actually, that made me just like, well, then it's a no-brainer. Like, I won't worry about the glass of wine I had last week, because it's not going to make any difference. Like, it literally is not going to make any difference. And for me, that was quite empowering, because it gave me that confidence of being right, no, we've definitely made the right decision. Because in the end, it was my eggs that, you know, even though we were diagnosed with unexplained infertility, you know, as the years went by, it obviously was my eggs that was kind of the issue. So I think moving to donor, which I know quite a lot of people, you know, it's a big decision, and it is, you know, and probably, you know, Becky, defining mum, and I talk about this a lot, is one that you will constantly revisit. Like, it's not a finished, well, it never will be a finished conversation, because I think it's just, it's such an incredible thing. Like, I still can't get my head around it sometimes, of just thinking that that's possible, you know, like it is something out of a science fiction film. Like, it's like, that's amazing. How does that, you know, does that even work? And I know it can be a really big decision for some people, but, and a lot of people ask me, well, how did you make the decision, and what did you do, and what was the process? And I'm just not sure that's for us. I was like, you will just find out whether it is or not. You know, you will just, I think it's not as easy to say that you will go down that path just because you want to have a family. I don't think it's as easy as that. I often say that that is part of the reason why we did it, because we wanted a family, and that was the way that we could have one. So therefore, in a way, it was quite an easy decision, but it isn't that simple. I can't really remember my point now.
Don't worry. No. I think it's all fascinating, and it's all to the point where, you know, like, people who are listening because they want hope and they want to find out more about donor, you know, I think that they just listening to you talk is just, you know, I think is going to be so helpful. And for those who are pregnant, a lot of them are probably have been through a lot of these feelings. So having, like, hearing someone say them is incredibly validating. And you went through a lot before you found the resources that you needed and the people you needed to speak to. You went to a therapy session, like you said, you know, you made the decision to go with the donor. You're pregnant. You know, how do you think? So you had lots of support in the lead up to. What support are you reaching out to now? And also, I guess, what are you kind of putting in place, or have you thought about what support you might have in place? And this could be donor related or otherwise, you know, this is kind of whether you're doing antenatal classes,
yeah,
people around you, but when you have your little one, you know, have you really, you know, you said earlier on, you're like, oh my god, there's going to be a baby in the house, you know, like, how are you preparing for that, I guess, in a support aspect?
I guess at the moment, support is really just talking to people, and I think it's weird, because you're so immersed in a world where there's a lot of chat about, you know, whether it's people who have come through the other side and are now parenting like you, or, you know, there's a lot of resource around to pull on whatever you want to pull on. And I know we always used to joke that, you know, we were kind of pseudo experts in IVF, but, you know, I'm in no way a pseudo expert in giving birth. But I have an amazing consultant. Not that my position needs to be consultant led. It's just that she's actually a friend of my sister-in-law's, and we've really lucked out in terms of she wanted to look after us. So we've been really fortunate. But I'm really lucky. Like, I have her phone number. I can text her whenever I want, which is really reassuring, actually. We're on an antenatal class that we've been booked in since January, but obviously it's all online now.
Because we are recording this mid-COVID and mid-lockdown, just because I know it'll go out a bit later, but just to say that. Worth explaining, so a lot of stuff has gone online, hasn't it? Yes.
Yeah, so we're currently in, well, I think I'm week 7 or 6 or 7 of sort of self-isolation in the middle of this crazy time. So yeah, so our antenatal has gone online. I mean, God knows how I mean, I've heard really good review and really good feedback from lots of people who have been doing their online antenatal courses. So, and I think it's still about connecting with people. All right, it's on Zoom. But in fact, maybe that might be better in some ways, where you're not in a room and everyone's feeling awkward and not really, you know, especially the blokes, I think. So when doing that, I'm listening to a lot of podcasts. I'm doing a bit of reading. I'm doing a lot of shopping. Yeah, I mean, at the moment, I guess it's, in a way, trying to take the positive out of the situation. Being at my stage of pregnancy at this particular time, I think actually is not bad. Like, it's pretty good. Like, there's, you know, there's a lot of nesting going on, and we're sorting out the nursery. We've got a lot of furniture to build, and I'm still sort of collating bits that we need. And all right, it would have been nice to be able to go and do that with people, or go to my John Lewis nursery appointment, but I can't. So you just have to adapt to the situation that you're in. I think post birth, to be honest, I have no idea, like, because I just don't know what situation we're going to be in, and therefore what that allows. Like, I do, we're very, very lucky in that we have both our immediate families less than 2 miles away from us. So we have a lot of support in that way. I mean, I know my mum is literally, well, they all are, but, you know, just gagging.
Chomping at the bit, I'm sure.
Lay their hands on this baby. But we don't know whether that's going to be possible, you know. And I really feel for people, you know. I'm hoping in a positive way that in another 8 weeks when I'm due, that we will be through the worst of it, and that we'll be in a different phase of lockdown or social distancing, or, you know, that there will be a more relaxed way of living our lives, whatever that means, you know. And I really feel for people who have been at the moment. Like, I mean, it's really tough.
No, you're absolutely right. To have a little one, and it is, you know, there is something to be said 100% about it just being you and your little one, you know, and not having loads of visitors around and everything like that. But equally, you know, you want people around some of the time. You know, I remember my mum turned up our first day back from the hospital, and like, we say that she kind of got us to ground zero, because she did all the washing, she sorted stuff out. It meant that Bob could look after me, which meant going to Tesco's and getting food and sorting that, and I could look after Ren, you know. And so my mum, obviously she held Ren and was there for me and everything else, but just her being there, like, she got shit done basically, which was amazing. And for some people, they haven't even got that, and the contact, and, you know, kind of just having a hug or someone to talk to who's right there. It must be so tough, so, so tough. You won't know any different, but, you know. And also, like you say, our parents, our friends, our siblings, they've been waiting a long time for this little one as well. You know, they're kind of grieving the loss of those first few hours and days and weeks kind of with them too. So yeah, hopefully, I really hope for everyone that this lifts sooner rather than later, because of what that will mean for the world, obviously, as well, that we're kind of, you know, heading out of this crisis, but on a much smaller scale for everyone in their individual homes and families, so that it means that, yeah, all of those people.
Yeah, I mean, too, as you say, I think, you know, there's all that, you know, drawing up the drawbridge for the first two, and that's fine when you know what's on the other side of the drawbridge.
Yes, exactly.
But I think that's probably what's tough at the moment, and it's kind of that question that you can't really answer them, because it's just so the unknown. And actually, as with all these things, I know there's been a lot of chat about how actually people have been through IVF are quite equipped to deal with coronavirus, because it is the unknown, and you're having to adapt to a set of situations and circumstances that you don't have control over, and I think that's so right. Like, your mentality and the way that you approach things is, you know, you're set up for that. And so equally, I think post-birth, if that is the situation, you know, yes, it will be heartbreaking in a lot of ways, but it is that thing of, it's not forever, it won't be forever, and, you know, these are extraordinary times. And you know, also in a way, I'm a bit like, bloody hell, this is some story. You know, like, what a story to tell our kids, that we were pregnant with him in this and this, this, and we couldn't do this. And, you know, while you were in there, like, we were standing on our doorsteps, and, you know, all of these things. It's just, you know, You couldn't make it up.
You couldn't. And I was saying this in the hangout at the support group. I don't know if it was the one that you came to or the one before that, but how, you know, we're going to be teaching our kids, or they're going to be learning about this in their classrooms when they arrive and as they grow. And this is going to be something that's going to be in the history books. And we're going to be saying to them, like, I anticipate that I'll be saying to Ren, her first birthday was in isolation. We're going to be telling our little ones they were born during that time, that no one could come. As crap as it is, it's also going to be quite fascinating, you know, that that's going to be such a huge part of their lives, really, and the world that they were born into, really, and how much the world is going to change fundamentally because of all of this, actually, is just going to have such a long-term impact on our babies, isn't it? It's a bit crazy.
It really is. And as you say, like, I think it's just fascinating. I mean, and again, I know we talked about this, but I mean, I feel like I am living in a bit of a bubble because, you know, very fortunately, it hasn't directly affected me in any way at the moment. And, you know, that's great, or any of, well, sort of my family, but nothing bad, you know. And I feel desperately sorry for those people that it has affected in that way. And I can't imagine. But at the moment, I'm just sort of getting on with my life like I normally would, or I'm trying to anyway, you know. I'm trying to kind of just take it through and just do it kind of week by week. I mean, the weeks are flying by. I don't know whether it is, I kept saying the other day, like, I don't know whether coronavirus is doing this on purpose. Like, it gave us really great weather and time seems to be going really fast. Like, if it's going to take all of this shit, then it has to give us something back to get through it. And I mean, I'm not very spiritual at all in any way, but on some level, I think there's something about this going on, you know, like this kind of serendipitous. But time is flying and it's kind of like, well, the weeks will go by and then we'll be on the other side. So everyone crack on, keep smiling, because it will be over at some point.
Yeah, it will. It will. And sadly, at some point, because of a really amazing thing, i.e. you've had your baby, your pregnancy will be over. So enjoy these times. I know they're going really quickly, but it's almost like, kind of hold on to them as much as anyone, you know, to anyone out there who's pregnant.
It's actually also, though, a really good time to enjoy being pregnant, because you're actually in your own, you know, you don't have to be anywhere. You're not really seeing anybody. You're kind of just, me and baby Dave often have little conversations during the day, you know, like, not very interesting ones, but, you know, it's different because I don't have another child to look after as well. I know some of my friends who have been going through the same process and now have a toddler and have just given birth or about to give birth. They're like, this is not how we expected this time to be, because we would have had more help, or we would have, you know, whatever. But as first time parents, it's quite nice. It's quite, you know, it's been quite nice, just the two of us just pottering around and doing things. So actually that has made it really enjoyable. The only thing being that I've got a lot of outfits that I got bought for my birthday that I thought I'd be swanning around in, that I am still swanning around in, but just at home, which is slightly disappointing. But they can be worn afterwards. But yeah, that's the only downside, I would say.
I would take that as a downside. Right, I'm going to have to call it a day there, because I feel like everyone's going to need to get on with their days, even though we could carry on chatting for ages, I'm sure. And if anyone wants to follow you and kind of carry on that conversation, they can, like I said, Trying to Be a Mum. The link will be in the show notes. And yeah, I just want to say thank you so, so much for joining us today, joining me, you know, for you guys to join me. And a huge congratulations again. It's just amazing. I love it so much.
Thank you so much. Thanks for asking me. Yeah, it's always so lovely to chat to you. And yeah, we could go bang on for hours. So, but yeah, if anyone, you know, is considering donor, or, you know, or IVF, or talking about, I'm pretty good generally at replying to DMs and various things. So yeah, do just get in touch.
Perfect. Lovely. All right, then. I will see you soon, lovely. Take care.
Take care.
Bye.